Internet Informed, Guidance for the Dedicated Searcher, as read by the author, David Novak. This book is an element of the Spire Project. Chapter 6, Structure. Returning from Aragon, having first talked his way into accompanying the highwaymen as they returned, then having discussed a trustless pause in hostilities, Albert found his reputation greatly enhanced. Invited to court in celebration, he chanced to dance with a most enchanting lady-in-waiting. Enwrapped in the newness of court and women in general, Albert's feelings flowered most fragrantly. He yearned, he adored, he sought salvation in a romance that could never be. Indeed, any appearance of physical intimacy would greatly harm the lady's reputation. Courtship was only that, courtship for the sake of courtship. This slow circling, these expressions of adoration, served only to celebrate the soul, the lady's most certainly, but ultimately the man's as well. Albert's initial devotions were clumsy indeed, of only fleeting interest to the lady he sought. His second love, the petite daughter of a wealthy Basque cloth merchant, responded in a way that drew from Albert a hidden reserve of passion. With deft attention and distraction, she helped Albert reach deep within his soul. Months of ecstatic, tender attentions amid the crafting of much awful poetry ceased abruptly when her family married her off to a wealthy suitor and she moved away. Such painful parting, such unrequited love, her last, most beautiful gift. At the scene of a messy train wreck, two investigators search for clues. The first searches for that one clue that reveals the way forward, that critical piece of evidence that explains why the crash occurred. A beer bottle beside the driver's seat, the twisted stretch of track, the rotten wood of a collapsed railroad tie. Wandering among the rubble and broken freight cars, our first investigator casts a sharp eye about for possible clues. Our second investigator looks instead for the best vantage point, that one critical and distant position that reveals everything that happened and points to the place where evidence must exist. The train jumped the track here. It slammed into the other train there. We cannot see the crash clearly from this mound here on the right, so let's move to that hill on the left and look again. Both approaches have merit. That beer bottle will not be found from atop that hill on the right. That first point where the train jumps the track cannot be found standing amid the wreckage. Both approaches have merit, and we practice both approaches when we search the internet. We know how to search in a precise manner using the five critical tactics of quote, minus, or, in URL and link. We know something of the distant overview and its reliance on context format source. Structure belongs to that second investigator standing atop the hill. Grand structures are best seen from a distance. Certain information is already organized for our benefit and does not require us to descend into the massive train wreckage to sort by hand. The principal internet structures we will discuss are government hierarchies, geography, associations, directories and nexus points, commercial quality databases, and the use of a thesaurus. We will also address three structures found within a website: website search functions, staff directories, and website hierarchies. Let us move through these structures one by one. Eventually, we will hold these structures in our mind, awaiting a time when, like a grappling hook, we throw a line and attach our question to one of these existing structures, then climb up to our destination. Government hierarchies. Every state and national government website prominently displays a list of government departments and agencies. You will find this list linked directly to the state or country homepage. If we can reach this agency list, we can easily find the website for the Department of Education in Western Australia, South Australia, Alaska, and Argentina. Furthermore, we can locate state and national government websites easily with a directory like Foreign Government Resources on the Web from the University of Michigan Document Center. Yes, thanks to ranking technology, we can also find the state website for Alaska by simply tossing Alaska at Google or Yahoo. Alaska inurl:.gov works with more certainty. Knowing something of states and web addresses, the address is probably just alaska.gov. This means that if our boss arrives rather excitedly one morning raving about the child care reform package recently released by the state of Virginia and asking for a copy just as soon as the cup of coffee can be found, we know what to do. Oh, what do we do? Well, we have three ways to proceed. We can search a global search engine like Google or Yahoo for Virginia Child Care Reform in the hope that the search engine has already indexed it and found it worthy of visibility. Two, we can search a government-only search engine like FirstGov, firstgov.gov, or the Google's U.S. government search known as Uncle Sam on google.com/ig/usgov. Again, hopefully they index the page and consider it prominent. 3. We find the website from the state of Virginia, move to its agency list, select the agency responsible for childcare, then look on that agency website for the reform package we know must be there. This third approach works every time. Simply follow the thread through the government hierarchy to where the report resides. Instead of searching all across the vast internet, let us search only the website of the appropriate agency. The key is in recognizing that any child care reform package must sit upon, or at least be very clearly referenced by, the appropriate government agency website. The train must have jumped the tracks here and slammed into the oncoming train there. Using this approach, we could quickly gather 100 child care reform packages for review by simply visiting the appropriate agencies for 100 states and countries around the world. Most significantly, such a search would be comprehensive. It would be complete. Unlike a search with a search engine, we would not miss a report because we search for child care instead of child care, or because the report was released 2 hours ago, or because the report is forgotten and considered lacking in prominence, or has an unusual title, or is buried under 100,000 other related reports. Even if the report is not present, we know who to ask. Call the agency on the phone. They must know where it is. This is the best way to find a government report. There is the temptation to search for government material as we might search for a book. Find any book on how to play the piano, then look on the shelves nearby for the book we want. On the internet, we might throw some basic keywords at a search engine to find a regional government document on childcare. This should tell us the agency involved and land us on the website. Thus, a search for childcare, legislation, Western Australia, and hope this leads us to something on the website of the Department of Community Development, Western Australia. Unfortunately, this rarely works smoothly. We nearly always must scan long lists of possibilities and have no certainty we will find the right agency. This can then put us off using government hierarchy altogether. For a better approach, work like the researcher who simply reaches for a published directory of government agencies. Use the list of agencies found on the state government website. The other trap is like trying to search a library for books by illustrator Stephen Cartwright. As illustrator, Stephen works with various authors. His books are not shelved under his own name. They are scattered all over the library. The government hierarchy works when we know or guess the information will be found on the government website. If an agency is only peripherally involved, if they are only an interested bystander, reaching for a government agency website will not help us. I pose the example of the child care package in Virginia in many of my seminars, and very few attendees immediately reach for the state government agency list. As with other structures on the internet, we must learn to think where the information most likely resides. Will any structure, like government hierarchy or geography, lead us part of the way? Geography. Many questions have a geographical dimension, questions that pertain to a place, an area, a region, or a country. At other times, we should ask questions with a geographical limit. Different communities will overcome a particular problem in different ways and at different times. How does Argentina deal with child care reform? How does Venice deal with having too many pigeons in Piazza San Marco? Answer: contraceptives in tourist-bought pigeon food. As soon as we can link a question to a specific region, a new set of very specific tools leap to offer assistance. We have about 5 regional resources to consider. 1. Regional search engines. 2. Babelfish language translation. 3. Regional English language newspapers. 4. Local newspapers. 5. Global search engines restricted to region by using inurl:.au, site:.au, or restricted to a certain language. Search engine colossus.com is the definitive directory for regional and national search engines and directories. It is very comprehensive. Want a local search engine for Spain, Sri Lanka, or Singapore? Come here. Hunting for a European take on childcare? Reach for an all-European search engine. Regional search engines were once thought certain to blossom into big business and thought certain to offer a clearly superior search. Sadly, the whole regional approach never really took off. Many of the regional search engines are not vast nor quick, and regional searching never became a common habit, though I hope it will someday. Many a regional search engine will, of course, lead us to a webpage in a different language, The solution is Babblefish, named after a most amusing creature found in The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, a book by humor writer Douglas Adams. I have an example I enjoy delivering in seminars that rather perfectly captures the value of a regional approach. During the Jubilee year of 2000, I took my wife to the Vatican. While planning the trip, I wondered if we could attend a nice opera. I naturally turned to the internet for help. A global search for Rome opera schedule seemed to recommend only travel companies focused on taking East Coast Americans on European cultural trips, trips that include the occasional opera in Rome. A global search for Rome opera tickets seemed to lead to only British companies selling tickets to events across Europe, events that included the occasional opera in Rome. No, none of these companies were linking to schedules of Roman operas. We need to go to Rome. Our question has a regional dimension, so we can use a regional search engine like Ariana at ariana.libero.it to find Italian pages on Italian operas. After all, the Italians probably know best what operas are playing in Rome. To overcome the language barrier, I open a second window with my web browser and point it at AltaVista's Babblefish, and translate each page as I go. First, I translate the search engine's Italian answer to my search of Opera Roma. I can see clearly Opera di Roma on the list. Next, I translate the homepage for Opera di Roma, and I see I want to visit the Biglietteria, the ticket office. The website of the Opera di Roma does not help me, but searching further in this manner, first in Italian, then translated English, eventually led me to the Jubilee page by a government agency listing all the events in Rome, operas, plays, and concerts. I would not have found this list if I stayed with a global approach to searching. Today, there is an English site dedicated to events in Rome, but this style of translation allows us to move beyond the English zone and reach information not yet prepared for us in English. In addition to translating foreign language websites, we also have English language newspapers to consider. Numerous English language newspapers dot the globe and are available to read online. There are even English newspapers in Pakistan, Cuba, and Korea. Just approach a directory of English language newspapers like that at dailyearth.com. Years ago, I made a tool for English language newspapers at spireproject.com/spnews.htm. Using regional newspapers is a time-honored approach in information research. Most cities have just one significant newspaper, so any issue of interest to a local audience will appear in this one clearly visible resource. In competitive research, we may scan a local paper for employment advertisements and search through local newspapers' database of past articles for business or factory-related news. This will cost us and will require that we find access to the archived news database, but regional news of this nature is difficult to find another way. On a global topic, consider the New York Times, or indeed a translated news database like World News Connection, a U.S. government database once freestanding but now accessed through dialogue. Global internet search engines allow us to limit information by country code and by language. This is our fifth geographical tool. For countries, merely add in URL:// and then country code, as in pigeons in URL:.au or pigeons in URL:.it. The alternative site:.au works just as well. Language is selected from the advanced search page of each global search engine. This kind of simple limiting of results can be powerful in part because it takes so little time. Search for pigeons population control. Now show me just those in Italian. Keep in mind, however, the larger regional search engines probably offer better coverage than global search engines restricted to a specific country code. Associations. Unlike government agencies, associations have little overarching structure. It can be difficult to find the association we need. We only have the certain knowledge that foundations and associations exist for every occupational group and weigh in on every issue of public concern. If we wish, we can generate a decent overview of a contentious issue simply by listening to the opinions of two or three associations somehow involved. Indeed, after lengthy research, we often find the associations have a central role in explaining various perspectives. My exploration of the value of wind farms, for instance, centered upon the perspectives of two associations, a community group against wind farms and an association representing the British wind industry. In regards to teaching intelligent design in public schools, vocal perspectives emerged from the U.S. National Center for Science Education and the Discovery Institute. These are two associations, despite what their name may suggest. It is not always clear which association will offer the most help. While there are patchy internet directories of associations, they list associations, not those associations actively publishing internet material. Associations were generally late to internet publishing. Many published very little on the internet for public attention. However, by virtue that their purpose matches so well with the opportunities the internet offers, we could look forward to a rise in association publishing and more effective promotion of what they do publish. Perhaps one day the structure associations add to public discourse will be a more effective tool. I usually avoid using this structure, then notice too late that the best information came from two antagonistic associations. I look back wistfully and wonder if I could have saved time by searching for associations first. I'm also mindful that government and political research often involves little more than listening to the perspectives of relevant associations. Much of lobbying is merely associations speaking their mind, presenting their perspectives directly to policymakers. In another setting, away from the internet, we might simply reach for a directory of associations and start talking. Directories and nexus points. The directory forms one of the most fundamental structures on the internet. The information we seek is already organized for our benefit, the scaffolding already erected for us to climb to our answer. It seems everything has a directory these days. Can we rephrase our question to search for a directory instead of searching for an answer directly? If we seek a list of universities that teach information skills, we can search a global search engine by keyword, start with a directory of universities, then hunt through each for an information school, or search for a directory of information schools. I know the internet overflows with directories, so I search for the directory of information schools, and I find three suitable ones. My quest is almost complete. Furthermore, these directories make it very simple to repeat and extend my search at a later time. I also have a comprehensive answer, something I would not achieve with a global search engine. Yahoo and Open Directory Project are the two largest global search directories. Unfortunately, I often find these directories not specific enough for my questions. They can be relied upon to guide me towards university websites, but perhaps not to information schools. I would not expect them to list Brazilian football clubs, yet I'm certain lists of Brazilian football clubs exist. Yahoo and the ODP do not list international English language newspapers, but both clearly list sites that do. The ODP has a list of information schools, but I doubt it is comprehensive. Compare it to the World List by Professor Tom Wilson, a list both longstanding and famous. When it comes to finding that perfect directory, Yahoo and the ODP are probably not what we need, but may well lead us there. Paradoxically, the more time-consuming to build a specialist directory, yet possible, the more likely a specialist directory will exist. If several other people have searched for something difficult to find in the past, difficult as in effortful, not difficult as in confusing, then we will probably find the fruits of one of these searches presented as a directory. Searching for a directory is different from searching for the information they lead us to. Firstly, directories look different. They tend to have clear titles and say guide or directory. Secondly, we can find a directory through resources they link to. That is, we can triangulate their existence. Want a directory of cement producers, for instance? Just craft a search for pages that link to or mention two large cement producers. The list of matches will most certainly include any directories. Better directories tend to have prominence, too. So if only one cement producer springs to mind, we will probably stumble upon a directory when we retrieve a list of link pages linking to that one cement producer. Just on this topic, many directories only mention an address instead of link, so allow for this in your searches by including the address in quotes, as in link colon address or quote address. A directory is a comprehensive list of resources that match some criteria. This criteria and the experience of the person judging it will be significant to the value of the directory. At other times, as in a search for small meeting rooms and town halls, we may appreciate whatever we get. A directory listing may be the only information available online. Many small meeting rooms simply do not have websites. To use this structure, ask ourselves if we can rephrase our questions into a request for a suitable directory. Many a search that at first glance looks like something we should throw at a search engine is in fact a situation where a hunt for an easy-to-find halfway point would suit us better. Directories are often these halfway points. I use the term nexus points to describe other halfway points that are not directories but still strive to bring order to the internet. The largest nexus points are sometimes called portals. These websites link to and describe resources of interest, but not with the indexing and size of a commercial quality database, nor with the focus and comprehensive nature of a directory. Nexus points merely link to many resources on a particular topic, and do so in more detail than usual. The best Nexus points have prominence, peer respect, and good coverage. Such sites make no effort to index all the relevant material, but do bring together a great many resources we need to accomplish something. If we display the mass of internet information in a graphical manner, we could see certain sites radiate links to many of the most important resources out there. Such sites are not resources themselves, they will not answer our question, but they bring together the resources that do. Consider these as the grown-up version of the humble guidebook. Naming them Nexus points does not represent a new way of searching. We stumble upon various efforts to organize the internet all the time. However, do we recognize them as structure? Do we ever search for them directly? Nexus points attract searchers since they are great places to gather an overview of the type of resources available on a topic. They also assist publishers to build awareness for their information. Better, Nexus points act like magnets to people actively organizing the internet. They become collaborative efforts, or at least incorporate ample volunteer participation. Such Nexus points work as meeting points for researchers, publishers, and organizers. I remember back in the early 1990s, I was commissioned to organize relevant information for a housing authority. I searched and searched for information about housing and urban development, but could not find more than a few items very separate from each other. In my mind, I knew that somewhere there should be a Nexus point of communication about housing information. Eventually, I found it in the HUD Users Group website centered around one of the U.S. federal agencies with an interest in housing and urban development. Once I found that resource, only then could I say that I had completed my work. Many of the more prominent articles and resources were referenced in this website, and I could reasonably hope new groundbreaking resources would appear there in time. An individual can create a Nexus point, but will find it very hard to sustain the work. In earlier years, the success of a Nexus point pivoted delicately on how actively it harnessed the support of members willing to share around the tasks involved, or on any elusive financial support it could secure. Later, Nexus points became a prized business model, adding a layer of advertising and commercial marketing. This layer often destroyed the subtle synergy born of volunteer group effort, but when successful, advertising provided the financial foundations to reach further. Nexus points have a particular feel. They are fairly easy to recognize and distinguish from other kinds of web projects. They have far more links than most pages. They are very topic-specific. They put thought into describing and categorizing links. They are also usually full of voices directing us to destinations that answer questions. The importance of the Nexus point will emerge later in this book, but for the moment, they are a destination, a halfway point we can use to help answer questions. They provide one more element of structure within the internet galaxy. The most refined internet structure emerges in commercial quality databases. Resplendent with multiple fields and detailed descriptors, these databases exist as islands of tightly organized resources amid an ocean of less organized material. Some commercial quality databases are free. Databases like PubMed for medicine, ERIC for education, PatFT for U.S. patents, and LOCOC, Library of Congress, far more are not. Gary Price and Chris Sherman published their book, The Invisible Web, in 2001 on this topic. Variously known as the Invisible Web, the Hidden Web, and the Deep Web, these realms are dominated by focused databases, often pivotal to a search. One of the central tasks of all searchers involves resource discovery, and we must keep a particular eye open for extensive, significant databases. The financial success of a commercial quality database depends either on building a paying clientele or in securing government funding. This means that while the idea of creating a definitive pocket of organization appeals to many, the task is often expensive and fraught with financial risk. However, the best free databases are stellar achievers and do much to improve our access to information. Because of financial challenges, usually only a few free commercial databases will exist for each individual field, and we can guess many of them once we have a little experience with databases. Of course, we will also encounter many databases too small, too patchy, or not prepared to a commercial quality. For paid commercial databases, there is a definitive global directory by Gale Publishing, and separate directories for each of the large database retailers like Dialog and LexisNexis. Firms like these on-sell a range of databases, much like a supermarket sells food. If it were not for the financial difficulties involved in presenting improved information on the internet, we would have many more of these islands of tight organization. As it stands, a delicate cost barrier separates the Internet from most of these commercial databases. We will explore this dilemma further in Chapter 8. The Thesaurus. Tagging recently ballooned in popularity with services like Delicious or Flickr capturing media attention. The first is a service for sharing bookmarks, the second for sharing photos. By attaching descriptive keywords to each resource, other users can more easily find something on a particular topic. We could ask, for instance, for a list of all pictures described as volcanoes. This idea of tagging is simply another version of a decade-old habit of adding descriptors to articles or subject categories to books. However, unlike the Internet, library catalogs, and especially commercial quality databases, put a great deal of consideration and effort into selecting the most useful keywords and descriptors, then using them in a standard way throughout the database. The subject headings of a library catalog are used uniformly throughout the library. There are no synonyms or competing words, no overlap. The Dewey Decimal System has just one number for each book. Such a refined use of indexing terms is definitely missing from the Internet. For a database, the definitive list of descriptors is called a thesaurus. Yes, this is slightly different from the more common definition of thesaurus as a book listing similar or related words. The thesaurus of a database is a list of descriptors used to index material in that database. For example, MeSH is the definitive list of tags used by the PubMed and Medline databases, databases prepared by the U.S. National Library of Medicine. MeSH is available online and can be very helpful in finding the right term to describe juvenile diabetes, diabetes mellitus type 1. All articles on juvenile diabetes in PubMed can be found by searching for diabetes mellitus type 1. On the Internet, however, articles on juvenile diabetes will use various terms. They may use childhood onset diabetes instead. A quick search on Google found diabetes mellitus type 1, 2.4 million matches. Juvenile diabetes, 2.6 million matches. Childhood diabetes, 272,000 matches. Early onset diabetes, 40,000 matches. Childhood onset diabetes, 12,800 matches. What variations are we missing? All these matches discuss the same condition, but if we do not search under each term, we will miss something. If we miss only more of the same, we could generally overlook less popular terms. Unfortunately, the terms we use to describe something tend to vary by field or discipline. A search for juvenile diabetes may lead to more introductory, more popular resources. Diabetes mellitus type 1 may lead us to more medically sound and research-based resources. I encountered this difficulty in some searching I did into staff loyalty programs. Business people tend to use a variety of terms, including staff loyalty, employee relations, and labor relations. However, searching with these terms reveals very few pages with anything to do with retaining nursing staff, a big issue for hospitals. Apparently, within the medical and hospital environments, the terms I just mentioned are not in popular use. A look in MeSH reveals the preferred term to be personnel loyalty. If we do not look at a thesaurus, we can easily and mistakenly assume we have little to learn from how hospitals retain nursing staff. We miss this because we do not search with their preferred term. Global search engines offer to correct our spelling on search words, and sometimes will suggest alternative words. A good generic thesaurus, like the one built into Microsoft Word, or a published thesaurus can help too. Indeed, merely keeping an eye open while we read articles will often alert us to similar terms that could lead to further information. However, to do this right, we may need a specialized thesaurus like MeSH. This is, after all, the purpose of the database's thesaurus. In a sense, they offer us a structure to assist us to find the terms used in that discipline. Finding the right term can be very tricky. Many a search pivots on this point alone. Once we find the right term to search for, the technical term, the term used by professionals active in that field, we will find information produced by those professionals. The thesaurus is one of the few tools and techniques available to reveal that critical term. This is a most welcome structure, and I would encourage you to bookmark a significant thesaurus that covers your field of expertise. Internal structure. Internal to large websites, we will always find a search function, a staff directory, and some sort of directory structure intended to help us find information we need. These three structures can help us answer certain questions and should certainly not be overlooked as potential halfway points. Astronomy Pictures of the Day APOD author Robert Nimeroff works for Michigan Technology University, and while his partner, Jerry Bonnell, works at NASA's Goddard Space Flight Center. Both organizations have staff directories, so we should have little difficulty finding an email address. No, we do not search for Jerry Bonnell Goddard Space Flight and hope it reveals a page with his email address. Such searches are clumsy and take a long time. It's easier to reach for something specific we know exists than to find something nebulous that may not. The structure of a large website often mirrors the internal structure of an organization. Directories follow the organizational tree. Information on a specific project will be found under the school, agency, or institution working on it. Website, department, school, professor. Or website, department, sub-department, project. Alternatively, directories may be separated by target audience and function. Different directories address the needs of investors, customers, students, and staff. So, website, investors, institutional investors. Or website, investors, annual reports. Websites structured as organizational trees are far more common. As we search, we can move up a directory to learn more about which part of the organization is involved. We can move down to a specific page by selecting the department or individuals involved. If we know a specific department publishes a report, we can find our way there using the structure of the website. Yes, this is obvious, but surprisingly easy to overlook. The Internet Mesh. Let us chart some of the structures we have discussed up to this point in this book. This exercise has the advantage of being visual, memorable. The basic vision of this web looks like this. A page, search engine linking to it, links going to further resources. To this image, we can add several further pieces. Firstly, the web works in both directions, in both inbound and outbound links. Remember, we find inbound links with the link field search, but these links are just one of three types of endorsements. Our new image looks like this. A page in the center, with referencing information going in inbound links, other endorsements going in, and leaving our links to further resources. Now let us add information held nearby on the same computer. Such information can be found using the URL field search, or less easily by hacking the web address or surfing. To our image, we now add local context, position nearby. Now let us add link companions, information by the same source archived elsewhere, as well as information in the directory above. We now have a complex image that's on page 193 of the book. We can further extend this picture back in history by adding recent search engine cache copies of a website and adding the much older copies held in archive.org. Remember a bookmarklet I introduced in Chapter 5? History is also just a click away. So here is the Internet Mesh. At the page level, far from caught in a web page is woven into a fabric of interconnections and relationships. Many of these connections help us with the quality assessment and with finding related information. These are all connections. We should become adept at moving along any of these lines of connections. Furthermore, seeing the Internet as a mesh frees us to approach information from a range of directions. Remember, until we break our reliance on search engines, we have not truly touched the heart of searching. Suppose our small local theater has a concert we wish to attend. When does it start? We can search a global search engine by keyword, search a regional or a local search engine, reach for a directory of plays or concerts here in town, or visit the website of the local council that runs the theater, then move to that part of their website that describes the theater and its upcoming events. See, the Internet has structure. This is not a cloud we are working with. Clouds do not have strings or roads. Clouds have no scaffolding. Yes, we can filter the Internet as if it were soup, but we can also grasp these structures and use them to hoist ourselves close to our destination. Our critical step is simply recognizing situations when government hierarchy, geography, critical databases, or a thesaurus can assist us. We stay alert to these opportunities, a topic continued in the next chapter. One trap is to consider structures like these as the essence of fine searching. Do not read this chapter, then decide the most significant division in internet search technique resides between using a directory and a search engine. Directories are just one more element of structure, order, and organization to add to our growing collection. There is no fundamental difference between these structures and the keywords of Flickr, or a web ring on Narnia, or a directory of library catalogs, or the way format organizes the internet, or the way source can direct us to places where information is likely to reside, or how publisher motivation can guide us to likely publishers, a topic still to come. These are all elements of structure, order, and organization. From the start of this book, we have painted an image of the internet as a galaxy. We have just seen several more pieces of our galaxy fall into place. This galaxy of ours has regions set aside for Afghanistan, for Seattle, and for professionals discussing juvenile diabetes. Tight clusters of stars sit amid less structured space. Spokes, like spokes of a wheel, radiate out through the internet, connecting places that share a critical keyword descriptor. Spokes that come together in a thesaurus. Visualize structure within the galaxy of ours, its galaxy arms, its dust lanes, its bubbles and spokes and swirly bits. A galaxy is much more than a mass of scattered stars slowly drifting round.